Cloud. Okay, now we can start. So good evening, everyone. My name is Jenny, as you know. I'm the academic assistant and I will be facilitating the first academic committee meeting of the 2020-21 school year. And before we begin, this is a reminder to everyone that the meeting is being recorded and please make sure to state your name before speaking. However, members of the public, you do not need to state your name if you choose not to. With that said, let's begin. Today is Thursday, December 10th, and I'm going to let people in right now. 2020, and we are meeting for the regular MPS Academic Committee meeting. Ms. Covarrubias, would you like to lead the Academic Committee meeting?
Yes. Hi. Good evening, everybody. As Jenny said, today is December 10th. We're starting our academic meeting. And the time is, if somebody can help me,
5:05.
5:05. Thank you.
Yes, you are most welcome. So thank you. Since Ms. Covarrubias actually called the meeting to order, I'm going to go ahead and take roll. So Ms. Covarrubias. Rabbi Beliak.
Yes.
Thank you. Dr. Dikbosh.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And then Ms. Gonzalez is not here, but that's okay. Next, we're moving on to public comments. As a reminder, public comments are limited to 3 minutes per speaker or 6 minutes if translation is needed. Is there anyone on the line that would like to provide any public comments? If there is no one, then we will move on to the next item, which is approval of the agenda. Ooh, I echoed a little bit. Weird. Okay. So
I make the motion.
Thank you, Sandra. Making the motion. Can someone second it?
Second.
Was that you, Rabbi Beliak? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Okay, yes. Thank you. Thank you for seconding it. So I'm going to go ahead and take votes. Dr. Dikbosh?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Covarrubias?
Yes.
Thank you. Rabbi Beliak?
Yes.
Thank you. The motion to approve the agenda as presented has passed. Next, we'll move on to the approval of the minutes from the regular academic committee meeting that took place on September 10th, 2019. Thank you.
I make the motion again to approve the minutes.
Thank you, Ms. Covarrubias, for making the motion. Can someone second it?
Second.
Was that you again, Rabbi Beliak?
Yes, it was.
Thank you for seconding it. Okay, I'll go ahead and take votes. Dr. Dikbosh?
Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Covarrubias?
Yes.
Thank you, Rabbi Beliak?
Yes.
Thank you. The motion to approve the minutes from the regular academic committee meeting has passed. So moving on to section two, these are discussion items. Please note that since 2A and 2E are discussion items, there are no actions to be taken. So the first item in this section is the academic department updates presented by Mr. Erdin Jajar.
Well, good evening, board members, the academic team. And the public. This is Erdin Jajar, Chief Academic Officer. I'm happy to see you all joining us in our academic committee meeting. It's been more than a year, actually, since the pandemic hit us. We are happy to provide you with an update on the progress academically, how we are doing in terms of the data available in our hand and the program and services we have been doing so far. The entire academic team alongside with the accountability team, David Yilmaz and his team members are joining us tonight. So for any of your questions, concerns, feedback, we are available to listen, take notes and come back to you. So with that, we prepared slides for you. I'm hoping that you all have that in hand. If not, and you have received those before. It's on the screen for those who are joining us. I'm going to start presenting. We'll start with some high-level updates, then dive into data points that with data that we have in place to show you progress. And later, our academic team members will take turn to present their program services and the data points that they collected so far. As you have been informed and with us all along, we are right now on the distance learning with version 2 improvements in place. With the SB 98 state bill regulations in place, we wanted to increase our distance learning effectiveness with improvements in place, you know, such as, you know, high quality, you know, standard-based instruction. And therefore, we have been submitting the, you know, supporting the team members with professional development, you know, specifically observation tools and ongoing support. You know, specifically, we this year we are implementing a social emotional program called Zones of Regulation in our schools to address the needs of students' mental and health well-being needs for our kids. So that's going on in the classrooms, and then it's been taught by our teachers as part of the social emotional learning programs. We are giving particular focus to trauma-informed care and practices, and our team members will update you on those, as well as mental health and wellness awareness resources. We improved our curricular offerings in terms of the core curriculum programs and the tier 2 and 3 intervention programs, such as, you know, IXL, Nearpod, Paper, or Mayan reading program, and programs like Standards Plus, you know, that came into our repository and offerings. The big focus of initial months were in mitigating the learning loss and then having kids on track with the current version of the distance learning program. So therefore, we came up with, you know, structured schedules, daily live sessions, and those daily live sessions in schedules supported by programs such as the small group instructions, you know, daily, and the Saturday schools. And then with that, we supported our schools with guides and best practices and collaboration, and you know, continue with the professional development in terms of capacity building for flipped learning, where kids can learn independently and teachers can you know, design and deliver their instructions with blended learning practices. We have been doing virtual classrooms in the in teachers' classes, joining to their lessons, especially in math and ELA sessions, and observing the teacher-students' instructions to get the handle of the proper needs, and then provide services, coaching, and you know, mentorship for teachers, as well as professional development in terms of the learning and teaching. And the main focus being engagement with the distance learning as on par with you know, everything going on in the nation, and then our schools are also you know, experiencing the same thing with student engagement being low. We wanted to tackle that with number of programs and services like with this student portal, increased the effectiveness of our program access that students and families can access to our curriculum and lesson plans through our distance learning portal. In addition to parent square communication, we opened up student square communication, increasing the student interaction between the teachers and students, as well as our single sign-on program, Clever, is a platform and place for one shop access to all of our critical programs by students, teachers, as well as by our parents, so they can see and then access to our online platforms and such. We provide training to parents and students in terms of the policies, protocols, guides, because this is not being new for all as we learn the ins and outs and increase our capacity. We continue providing them the necessary training and guides for that as well. The assessment piece still continues with the SB 98. We have had waivers before, but with the opening of the classrooms in August, we knew we needed to track the student learning progress, and accountability being still in place, the state test, the ALPAC English learner assessments in place. We needed to have similar programs and practices going on. So we do have our NWA maps, measures of progress that we measure achievement and student growth. We continue tracking interim assessment blocks in alignment with the state assignments assessment tests, as well as our reading programs for Lexile learning and such. So to support that, we have assessment calendars and our team members provide deep dives, collaborations with the teachers. Thankfully, we have the Wednesdays in our schedules for collaborative times. So that that gives us time to pull teachers and then actually group teachers per grade level and per subject, so we can provide collaborative professional development across the organization level. So the two main groups being mostly impacted, as well as in the general populations that we serve in our schools, are English language learners and the students with disabilities. We're giving specific attention to those two groups with their needs, providing the integrated and designated instructional services, as well as assessing their program data, making sure they do qualify for English learner programs, and those who qualify to exit, they can exit as well. So they are being giving priority in the small group instruction and the Saturday schools, and as well as to the extent possible, and we did with small group in-person instruction, we invited those populations back to schools and provided them and have been providing them the instruction services that they need. The compliance with those programs, English language learners, special education, is big, and we do keep up with that in terms of assessment, in terms of reporting to agencies, whether local, county, and state, we have been providing several reports and services to our folks in terms of professional development, and as well as monitoring their progress academically. In addition to that, November being college applications and application months, that we have been supporting the college applications of our seniors, and make sure that our seniors get into the college that they are choosing, with them being prepared for most of UC CSU level acceptances. So that's being a focus progress. So this is kind of a high level summary of the past several months that since we opened, and we continue similar programs with the data that we can connect collect and make sure that we are making the impact and progress. The measurement piece of those is in alignment with the programs, and we share this data with you that we have several assessment tools in place in measuring the achievement, the proficiency, and then growth. Those are the terms that we use consistently in our organization. Not only we measure achievement and proficiency, we are also interested in measuring growth from one point to another. For that reason, we use NWA MAP tests, and we use interim assessment blocks. We do have MyOn, Lexile level reading program data, and most recently we have been giving particular attendance to the classroom data, which is the grades assigned by the teachers, and if our kids are failing or not. So that data is available in front of you, and I'll start explaining those with the team members, unless you have questions so far with what presented. So I'm going to put a pause here. Any questions so far?
Thank you. This is Chaim Beliak. Thank you very much. This is a lot of material, and I actually went through reading what was sent to us. One of the questions I have is, assembling all this material and these programs for the fact that most of our people are at home. Do we do home visits by going physically to people's homes, or I was not sure how the home visits were going this year as a way of seeing, where a person's studying, how I imagine a lot of people have small, cramped facilities at home. And if we discover that, are there any ways that we have to address that? I know it's not exactly curriculum, but I'm just worried about the practicality of people trying to work.
So thanks for the question, Rabbi Beliak. The home visit programs are our integral programs, and then we have been doing this before COVID-19, and then tracking the actual physical home visits. With the pandemic, we actually paused it till the end of the school year. So most recently, we have started home visits, but this is actually a home visit by virtual means, so not necessarily a physical home visit. Though I know team members they do interact with our families, you know, at personal level, not necessarily getting into their homes, but you know, delivering, you know, care packages, delivering, you know, Chromebooks, you know, in the beginning of the school year, the hotspots, and you know other supplies and materials needed as, but you know, for health and safety, you know, reasons that in our protocols we don't have that in place. That you know, when we you know encourage the staff to go into student families' home, and that's for mostly from a health and safety point of view.
Yes.
But the home visit programs, you know, most recently we changed our protocol and policy. You know, allow teachers, staff, to above and beyond of what they do. You know, they call in, whether it's through, you know, most of Zoom calls. And then the protocols have been updated, and David can talk about that. We allow staff to join families one-on-one and then listening to them and, you know, getting in touch, you know, virtually. David?
Good evening, everyone. This is David Yilmaz. So, yeah, we want to thank the board for approving the virtual home visits, and schools started doing it. As of now, I cannot give you an exact number because we have data collection cycles, and we are going to collect this data after the first semester ends. We do like quarterly updates because we don't want to bombard schools with like, hey, give us your data, because we ask so much data. But I can provide you the exact data after the first semester ends. Just anecdotally, I mean, like I was talking to a school the other day, they did like 70 to 80 virtual home visits. That's one school. And other schools probably did like, you know, maybe 20 to 30. I don't know if Brenda, you have any estimates on numbers, but they started doing it. So they were asking for this, you know, for virtual home visits. So it is happening.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Again, home visits being our, you know, main, you know, parental programs that we wanted to do in person. But at this point, not in person, but virtually, they are going on. Any other questions from the board members before we discuss the data?
I'm just wondering, how does the attendance data compared to the other semesters?
Correct.
I can see it here, but
yeah, we you know, I apologize, we did not present the attendance data, but we did have our dean of students meeting actually today. So the attendance and engagement, we separate these two terms right now from each other. By attendance, we mean whether we have our students with us moving along, you know, and then they do respond to us. So, you know, that from that perspective, you know, if our students, they join at least one class per day, that actually counts as attendance. From that perspective, the data being collected is pretty good, and actually better than as compared to in-person attendance. So all wide, we are about 97% ADA, which means that 97% of our kids, they do show up every day in at least one classroom, and then we do have contact with them. That's all why the data, the variations, you know, most of, we have schools as high as 98%. We have a few schools around 94-95%, which are small schools like MSA 4 and MSA 6. They're about 94-95%. So that means that we have contact, with our families and students, you know, every day, and at a rate of 97%. The other piece, whether they are meaningfully engaged or not, is the biggest question, and that's something alongside with everybody else in the nation and world, we are struggling as well as that meaningful engagement, meaning do they respond to teachers' questions? And then, you know, do they mostly turn in their work and provide high quality work? So that's, we are concerned, and the data showing that, you know, we do struggle with that. You know, again, it's not an isolated data. Having said that, I need to recognize and congratulate the teams that we have been very strategic on this. You know, the attendance and engagement. You know, most schools out there, they don't have 97% of their kids joining them. So that, you know, our data is pretty strong in that sense that our kids and families, they don't feel like, you know, they have the luxury whether they attend or not. I have, you know, Jennifer as well here, she can talk about that. We do have a tracking systems and then, you know, our truancy protocols in place that we have sent letters to families and students that, you know, those are not attending at the rate that we are expecting. And then we are following up, you know, the personal and personal level that, you know, that they do show up every day. So, yeah. So the engagement piece is an ongoing battle, and that's, you know, that involves kids joining the live sessions mostly, and when they join live sessions, do they meaningfully interact and produce the work, and that work being captured in our grade books as a grade, and when they take the mastery and summative assessments like quizzes and tests, do they produce a high level work, you know, rigorous work? That's not in place. And then the data that we are going to show you, the failing students data show that, you know, about 50% of our students are receiving at least in one classroom, you know, failing grade. So that's being captured by progress report number one and two. It is a concerning that one, every other student is failing at least one classroom. And then org-wide, it's, you know, it's something that we have been discussing with the school teams, the leadership teams at the Dean of Students and Dean of Academics level. We put certain measures in place, and we are going to continue making some adjustments so our kids, they don't check out. Actually, we don't lose them in the middle of the school year because we have another semester coming. We want to keep them all along with us till the end of the school year. So that's actually our focus area right now. Dr. Dikbash.
Thank you. I appreciate details.
If there are no other questions, I'm going to present the achievement data. So this is the English.
Yeah, I do have a question here. How does this failure rate compare to other years?
This failure rate is slightly higher than the previous years. You know, usually teachers, they do have you know, lower grades in the beginning of the school years, and then you know usually they do relax grading and then improve, you know, heavy kids you know, end up with a stronger grade level. So that data is being a trend regardless of the school year. But this school year particularly, you know, 50% is, you know, higher than previous year. So that is mostly kids and the teachers, students and the teachers are struggling with distance learning, the challenge of distance learning. The expectation of the teachers and the outcome of the students are not aligned, and we have and distance learning being new for everyone. That's an adjustment. So that and it was different before we started the school year. As you remember, in March when we closed. Our promise was mostly, you know, no kids will be harmed by the distance learning and then closures resulted as a result of COVID-19, and therefore we had relaxed grading policies. Almost no students were failing, and then those students were failing. We really needed to follow up and make sure that they at least do something. Under emergency distance learning. The school year started with SB 98, asking, you know, daily live instructions and rigorous standard-based high-quality instruction. And that was our expectation. We didn't want to continue with relaxed grading. So teachers and org-wide, we turned back into our regular grading practices. Like for missing work, we wanted to make sure kids are accountable, they turn in their work. The number of assignments, the expectation in the quizzes and tests that kids, they need to perform at a certain level. So they were back in our pre-COVID-19 expectations. And that started some struggle by teachers and students because we don't have certain things in control. We can't control the student learning environment. We can't have students in captive environment without disruptions of their environment that's going on. Their motivations and interests, they fell, and then that results in low engagement and low quality work. So that's those are the main reasons where we see these data points showing lower than previous years. So we need to calibrate our expectations and then make sure that students and teachers are closer in terms of what they can produce and what they can ask for.
I want to ask one of the what we call in Jewish circles, the question that is so obvious, but I do want to ask it. Given that the best thing that could happen to help raise things is that we would have the end of COVID-19, is there anything or any two things that jump out at you that would, and I realize silver bullets are not available, but I'm going to ask you if in your mind there is a silver bullet or two laying around that could make a difference. And I'm just doing that partly because I feel your struggle with this. And if there was something we could do, I would think we should make that a high priority.
Yeah, I mean, I'm monitoring the other schools and teachers as well. The other day, a teacher posted a tweet, and then the teacher was the teacher of the year, and he's saying that I'm crying right now out that I want to have the kids turn on their cameras, and they I can engage with them, interact with them, so and that he has not seen anything like this before. And then he feels like being the teacher of the year, being ineffective in what he's doing. And the other teacher, you know, started sharing his practices, you know, how to make kids turn on their cameras. Like for every student turn on camera, he started putting sticker on his face. So that was an incentive for kids to turn on their cameras. I mean, extraordinary times. So, you know, we need extraordinary measures, and some of our teachers are intuitively, they adjusted to distance learning. You know, many struggle, and then kids, some of our kids take advantage of this. So, and that's, you know, we don't have the control. Silver bullets, I don't know if there are any. You probably knew that there wasn't any, but the struggle is, you know, both ended, you know, from the teacher side and from the student side. I think those silver bullets are the motivation and incentives, you know, that, you know, we need to incentivize kids for joining us and staying with us as much as possible. So, you know, as we increase the time on task, that they interact with our teachers and then they come along and then stay with us during those live, you know, sessions, the more results we'll see. And that's what we want to focus on, you know, the incentivizing kids being with the classroom, joining and interacting with the teacher. So that's, I think, will be the focus moving forward. It's not resource issue. We do have teachers, we do have paraprofessionals, we do have administrators, but the innate nature of distance learning, this is like, you know, we have all the system protocols in place, but we are landing on Mars and trying to get, you know, similar results because we don't, and we are not designed to deliver instruction virtually. And every research shows that distance learning, the effect size and the impact of distance learning is low. It's a low modality of teaching and learning. So we see that, you know, we experience and we live that every day. So I know it's a long answer.
Before there's any questions from the committee members, is there anyone from the public that wants to make a comment? Okay, I just wanted to ask. Thank you.
So the data, you know, we basically show the student training data. This is our reading data in terms of the projection. So once we administer NWA maps, they give us projection in terms of the projected performance in the upcoming state test. So, and I put down there the data table, maybe small, I apologize for that, for comparative purposes. And this is for reading. Org-wide, it's showing we will have a 36.4 proficiency rate in the upcoming 2021 SPAC based on the NWA maps fall that we administered in September, October. And historically, our rate has been org-wide around 44%. So that's showing that we expect a lower proficiency. Having said that, this is it's been the fall projection has been, you know, lower in every other year as well. So it's low, but we usually end up finishing stronger. So this is one data that we have we went through with the school teams and discuss. So you can see variations from schools, and some schools have, in alignment with the past historical data, similar low performances than the others. And this is Matt. And again, for Matt, we all quite our performance in 2019 was about 31-32%. And now we see 19.4. Again, this is much lower than expected. We heard from a state that the upcoming state test will be shorter in terms of timing, but they are going to administer at this point unless there is cancellation coming. But this, you know, in case we administer them, that is going to be some of the projection. With NWA maps, we also measure growth. You know, the two data points that I showed were achievement. These are from 2 point as a cohort. The same students are taking the test, and then whether they improve to the expected level or not, and then you know, out of 100, the midpoint. You know, the average nationwide is 60%. So, you know, if we see 60% of our kids meeting their growth target, actually, we find this happy point. And then this table shows some of our schools are pretty close, some exceeded in terms of meeting the growth targets. And this is actually, you know, having this summer effect, you know, from fall to fall, and a mostly pandemic effect, especially in place as well. So from that perspective, it's not too bad. You know, those schools that are actually in red, you know, most MSA 6 in math and MSA 7 in reading, they were actually some of our stronger schools finishing later stronger in terms of the growth. We do expect them catching up. The next set of data will be from fall to spring. And you know, when we show that, we're hoping many of our schools, they met their growth target, if not exceeded them. The next data points to two slides will be on our program data. This is our English language learners. And in terms of, again, growth projections, whether they met their growth target or not, including, again, the summer and the COVID-19 effect. You know, worldwide, our ELs in math are about 45.6% meeting their growth target. And in reading, 45.5, and you see the variations from school to school. You know, some schools like MSA 3 gaining, you know, 83% proficiency growth target, and in math and 66 in reading. Some of the high level highlights, MSA 4 in reading 60%. And we have schools as low as 38% San Diego meeting their growth target in math, and Santa Ana 39%, and MSA 6 38%. Next set is with students with disabilities, their performance. Similar data points, 44.8 in math and 43.43. Some of our students with disabilities, they are also what we call them dual identified. They are ELs as well. We do have that dual identified data available. We didn't want to present it, but mostly they are similar data that, you know, therefore this will give you a similar perspective. You know, we have schools MSA 6 in reading meeting their 60% growth target, as high as MSA 5 in 58.06%. in MAT and MSA 857. Concerns in San Diego in MAT target for students with disabilities and MSA 7 in reading. So these are small groups, you know, talking about a few kids, you know. In San Diego case, we have 12 kids and, you know, MSA 7, 3 students, you know, make big changes in terms of proficiency. Next data set is going to be presented by our MAT department coordinator, Tracy. What we call interim assessment blocks, we administer org-wide and several one of them. So Tracy.
Good evening, academic committee members. So these interim assessment blocks do measure smaller chunks of content, much like a unit assessment would, and they are aligned to the summative assessments for ELA and math that students take in the spring. These are typically given after teachers teach the content. And so we will see a little bit of variation in the data from what we see with the NWEA MAP data, because teachers haven't had a chance to actually teach the content before the students take the assessment on it. So the data you currently see here is our projected proficiency from the interim assessment blocks that had been given and that we had gotten data on as of Wednesday, December 2nd. Currently, you see that in ELA, MPS has a projected proficiency rate of 49.63%. And in math, the projected proficiency is 35.65%. And then we did list each of the projected proficiencies for each of the schools, so you can kind of see the variation among the schools. And then as we get more of these IABs completed, we will continue to update the data and continue to project those proficiency rates. Rudensh, I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you, Tracy. I'll turn it back to you. Katie to present the Mayan reading data.
Good evening, everyone.
Katie is our EL and ELA program coordinator. Yes,
Katie. Thank you. Yes, I'm Katie Mann. So I work with all of our English teachers as well as our EL programs and help support our Mayan program. For anyone who's not familiar with Mayan, it is our digital reading.
I think she, her internet.
Okay, it wasn't me then. Yeah, I'm gonna continue. So this is our digital reading program.
Wait, can you guys hear me?
Yes, now we can.
Okay, sorry, I don't know what happened. So Mayan is our virtual reading program. It has been really helpful because students have access to text online, which during distance learning, as we know, is critical. What I do want to draw your attention to here is just the line in yellow, the average Lexile growth. You can see there school by school. And you know that goes all the way across to MPS wide. We're averaging about 31.8 Lexile points of growth from the fall until now. The reason that I want to draw your attention to this is because most of our schools are using Mayan at the middle school level. There's some exceptions in high school and in elementary as well. At Santa Ana, they use it. But most of them are using it in sixth through eighth grade. A seventh grader is expected to grow about 35 Lexile points over the course of the year. And already before the end of the semester, our schools are averaging over 30 points of growth. So this does really kind of highlight the work that our students and our staff are doing. We know that there is some learning loss, but this is a shining point, I think, that our students are still able to access text and make growth over the year. Thanks, Rudensh.
Thank you, Katie. We went over the failing student data. At this point, we are actually done with the data presentation. Any questions on the data that we presented?
Well, for there's any questions to be asked, I just wanted to ask the public if they have any comments before. Okay, if not, go ahead. Thank you.
board members, any questions? All right, we will move on. The upcoming slides are pilot updates. I know it's 5:54, so I'll ask my team members to not read all, but highlight you know, a few points that they can present to board members. With that, Dr. Kalam is our Director of Special Education and Support Services. Dr. Kalam.
Good evening, academic board, our academic team, board team. Okay. Okay, so we kind of tried to break it down into three different groups. I won't go over the supporting for distance learning because that kind of looks similar across the board, and I know my colleagues are going to bring that up. I will just mention that one of the things in that area that we do a lot of is monitoring and supporting the SPED team and working with the gen ed teachers so that they can collaborate and make sure that the students with special needs, as well as our dually identified students, are getting the accommodations that they're supposed to get, not only in the classroom, but on their assessments. And then I'll go down to SPED compliance and service provision. Okay, so we have created a uniform compliance guide, and it helps us with onboarding our new resource teachers, and it provides a reference for any time our teachers need forms like a prior written notice form or a three-date letter or different documents that we use in our practice. Okay, so, and then we have to do our CDE monitoring, which we do this every year when the state decides that there are elements that they want us to address. That can be disproportionality. It can be if we're tracking the students on CalPADS as they transition from high school into the world of work. But there are about 18 different areas that they look at. And so I have to work with the schools to develop their special ed plans and their DISPRO documents to submit to the state. And that happens annually. Then we do self-review. We do an entire self-review process as part of addressing these CDE monitoring elements. I'm trying to skip. Okay, so we do a lot of collaborating with LA Unified, LACO, California Department of Education, and San Diego, and we used to work a lot with Orange County, but now that Santa Ana has been reauthorized, we do a lot of that work with the state. Gonna skip a couple of these. We work with hiring the personnel, working with all of the teams to centralize our documents. So Jenny Obuchi has helped me develop a Padlet so that we can centralize all the SPED documents for the entire SPED team. Our SPED team does go beyond our SPED teachers. It's our SPED coordinators, our SPED, our resource specialists, our psychologists, and we do have one social worker. Advisor meetings and the SELPA professional developments. I do work with designing PDs and workshops for the different MPS sites, responding to complaints at the HMO level, and helping our teams navigate through the due process, not to be redundant, in case we are, you know, we have to deal with litigation. In terms of supporting student services overall, in collaboration with Dr. Lopez, we have established Magnolia's first mental health and crisis intervention team. And we're very proud of these people. There are approximately 15 people on this team made up of social work interns, as well as school psychologists. And they're doing a phenomenal job of supporting our students through particularly the pandemic, but even before the pandemic, just helping our students address crisis intervention, mental health concerns, and teaching them coping strategies. I'm gonna skip again. Doing the onboarding and the training and providing guidance and support for the school psychs, the counselors, and the special ed teachers. We do virtual PDs for the mental health professionals, work with the accountability team to assist in completing the CalPADS merger and submitting the SELPA authorizer state required reports, such as the personnel data, fiscal data, IRMS report, so that we can get reimbursement for certain services. And, you know, just working with the fiscal team to provide documents to make sure that our invoices are covered and assist in working with implementing the 504s and the GATE program. Any questions or concerns?
Before any questions, does anyone in the public would like to say anything? If not, okay. Committee members, if you have any questions, please ask them.
All right, we'll move on to our Director of Math Programs, Tracy Levin.
Good evening again. So this year's definitely been different and has made us all need to pivot in various ways. Much of the work that I have done so far this year has been focused around supporting distance learning. And Mr. Jarz mentioned a lot of that work already. One item I do want to point out that we've done for the math is the math pacing guides and assessment timelines have all been updated, knowing that more time was needed to be spent supporting students with their social emotional needs. So these updating pacing guides take that into account and give teachers the time to build the relationships with the students, as well as mitigate learning loss by focusing on those essential standards for each grade level. And so teachers can focus on the grade level instruction and tiered interventions while supporting students with their social emotional needs. And so we've been able to redo those pacing guides and the assessment timelines to really better fit with distance learning. In order to support the math teachers, you know, I feel like collaboration and making sure that we are maintaining relationships with one another and building relationships with our new teachers is really at the forefront. So I've worked to really build opportunities for our teachers to collaborate with one another. Our unit planning collaboratives allow teachers to work with other teachers across the organization that teach the same grade level. So often we only have one teacher teaching a grade level at our school. So this is allowing them to come together and plan instruction together and share those instructional strategies that are working for distance learning and help them identify the strategies and the data that will get them to the next steps. The data analysis workshops is another area that is new this year where teachers can come together, review the IAB data and really look beyond proficiency and use that IAB data to inform instruction to mitigate that learning loss that we all are all aware of and want to make sure that we're overcoming for our students. I've been also doing virtual observations. So I've been able to go into the math teachers' classrooms virtually and use our high quality distance learning instruction tool that we have created and be able to give really good positive feedback and actionable feedback to teachers. And they've been really appreciative of that. So those are just a few of the things. The last area that I kind of want to highlight is the math materials adoption cohort that we were selected to be part of. This is actually a grant-funded professional learning opportunity that was created through a partnership with Cal Curriculum and the CDE. And they are allowing organizations, both school districts and CMOs across California to learn together and work together to create a materials adoption process. And one of the real key points to this is that they're making sure that this adoption process selects materials that are not only rigorous and standards aligned, but provide equitable outcomes to students and really support focused on supporting the vision of the organization. So we've been lucky to be accepted in this year-long program, and we're able to learn from from Cal Curriculum and the CDE, and then we're going to be able to recreate that process for our stakeholders before we have to select any new math curriculum. So that's something that, you know, we're really proud of, and it's been a fantastic experience this year. So I'll turn it over to Jenny to ask her questions.
Thank you. If anyone in the public would like to make any comments or have any questions, please do so now. If not, thank you very much for letting me jump in. Committee members. Oh, I'm sorry. Committee members, if you have any questions, please ask them now.
Could you repeat the name, please, of the group that you were asked to join? And how did they come to us, or how did we find them?
So it is called Reimagining Your Math Materials Adoption. And it's a materials adoption cohort. They put out a application for a grant in the summer. And so we applied for it. And we were one of the organizations that was selected. There are, I believe there's three charter organizations that are part of it. And then the rest of them are all districts across California.
Thank you. And congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Tracy, I'm sorry. Were they in our last PD?
Were who? I'm sorry.
The people representing this program? Or I thought I remember hearing something about it.
No, we are. They actually have their own meetings that we are invited to attend, and then we will bring a lot of the information back to our stakeholders. So we haven't had anyone from the actual cohort present to our teams, but we are bringing that back. So it could have been that you heard about it through some of the information we brought back.
Okay. Thank you.
I meant to ask this of Dr. Callahan as well as you, Dr. Levin. Do you have, I know that all that you're doing, but if somebody was to say you could have X, and what would X be to help your program improve? I know that seems like a silly question. I mean, and the COVID, yes. But I think sometimes we need to ask that. I need X because it would change this for the teachers and the kids. I always like to ask that question.
You know what I would like? I would like to be able to, for the SPED team, because they're relatively new, we don't do a lot for them. We very rarely show our appreciation for the counselors, and like for the principals, we always feed them lunch. If I could just give them a token of appreciation once a year, I would feel better. That's something that has been on my heart. So.
Thank you. I don't know what that is, but let's offline discuss that and respond to that. I think that's doable. Tracy?
I just really want our teachers to know how much we appreciate what they're doing. I know I tell them that all the time, but I want them to truly understand that we see the work that they're putting in, we see the effort, and I would love to be able to just give them, you know, if they want a program, and, you know, if funding was no option, I know we have funds, but at the end of the day, I mean, we still have budgets to meet, and so their funding does become an issue at times. I feel like if I could really truly know that they're going to use a program and it would benefit the students, I would love to give them whatever they want to make teaching in this environment easier. But at the end of the day, really, it's just, I want them to know how much we truly, truly appreciate all the work and effort that they're putting into this, because they are doing a fantastic job. I am so pleasantly surprised with what I'm seeing in our virtual observations that, you know, just, I feel like my thanks sometimes is just not enough, and I want to just give them more.
Kind of on the humorous side, I'm ready to help the math teachers by donating my old slide rule, which I have no use for. I do think that the appreciation issue is very important. I think we need to keep thinking about that, especially now with this pandemic. Everybody, whatever they're doing, thinks they're the only one doing it. Everybody else is not there. They're alone. They're isolated. The appreciation becomes even more critical.
So Tracy, is there any programs that you have looked into that we have not been able to budget them? Or, you know, is there programs that the teachers have requested and due to budgets we haven't been able to, you know, bring it to them?
We've actually been able to do a lot. We actually have been able to give them more programs recently. So that is something that we've been working on. I think, you know, the caveat is too, as much as you want to give them all the programs, you have to be careful what you give them because students get overwhelmed. And every program we introduce to our students is something else that they have to learn. And we know how difficult learning new things is in this environment. So we've been able to really vet some of the programs and get those to our teachers. I don't know if it's, you know, when I say I want to give them everything, obviously, you know, one teacher will want something and another teacher will want something else. So as much as we want to give them flexibility with the programs that they offer, we also want to make sure that we know that they're quality programs. And so we've been able to do some of that. And then I haven't heard anything recently that we haven't been able to give teachers programs, but I think, you know, it's still something that new things come up all the time, and everything, you know, that comes out that's new, it could be the new shiny thing. And sometimes you want to give it to them, but you kind of have to balance the want to give them and the really, how is it going to affect students in the learning environment? So I hope that kind of answers that. I know I guess it's one of those things where if I want to give them all the programs they want, but I also want to make sure that it's manageable for our students. And so we can't necessarily give them everything because it won't be manageable for the students.
So speaking about students, I know that usually when you try new programs, you get the teacher's feedbacks. Do we get the students' feedbacks as well to see if this works for them, if they're enjoying it? Because I know as a, you know, alumni of a, you know, mom of an alumni, there were certain programs that he just hated and he just saw no point in them, but because obviously they were mandatory, he had to go along with them. But my question is for the rest of the students, like, do we get feedback from them to see is it fun, is it are they learning from it?
It's something that we have not formally done. We've done it through some conversations with teachers and have the teachers get feedback from their students. But I think it is a process that we can formalize as the year goes on before we decide to renew any new programs that we've brought on this year. I think that's a really good process to bring into place.
Yeah, I think that we need to focus not just in our math department, but in all our departments and just obtain feedback, you know, from our students, because yes, it might work for our teachers, but we need to know that the students are learning. And if they're not interested in the program, it's going to be very hard as it is. You know, we're struggling already to have students join or, you know, turn on cameras and just to be there present, you know. And so if on top of that we don't have interesting programs to offer, it's making it difficult for them to learn. So I don't know if somebody, Mr. Carr, somebody can answer.
Yeah, this I mean, we do get surveys from students, you know, twice a year, and we do in detail, sentence by sentence, analyze those surveys. And that, you know, as you know, those surveys have preset questions, also free response questions. So they, you know, anything that the kids, they don't like, they're pretty vocal about bringing those back to and most of they being, you know, the two items being uniforms and food, we rarely hear from them, you know, instructional materials and program evaluations. So, but the point you brought is a very unique point. And we do balance, you know, especially, you know, hearing from students, you know, what they will prefer versus what they need. Sometimes from that perspective, we look into, like, you know, when we go to doctor, you know, sometimes we end up things that we don't anticipate. But
I think we can balance it. I mean, yeah. I think we can come together and obviously not just choose fun programs where, you know, it's just about fun, but we can give them something that they can enjoy as they're learning.
Correct. I think what we can do is we can draft we do have program evaluations for our staff. You know, they do go evaluate the Mayan program, the curriculum, and the support programs and the distance learning online programs. So I think what you brought is a unique point that we can draft another survey for instructional programs for kids, and they can they share their experience with us, you know, whether it's been a pleasant, and if they like it and what works and what not, then we can make adjustments here.
Yeah, and just also include an option where, what would you want to see? What would you want us to bring to you? What would make you, you know, want to learn? Like, what would make you interested in, you know, to get you more focused and involving in class and just different, you know, because we have to listen to them because they're the ones that are learning. So we have to figure out a way to,
yeah,
you know, teach them.
Okay. Oh yeah. I took my notes. So we'll draft something and we can run it with you as well from an experience.
Okay,
parent of an alumni perspective, you can give us your feedback and we'll move forward.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Tracy. We'll move on to Dr. Wanda Lopez, our Director of Student Services, with her highlights.
Good evening, everyone. I'll move quickly through my slide. I just wanted to point out, thank you everyone for being on the call tonight. It's important that we get this feedback. I really appreciate, especially Sandra adding in that last point, because student feedback, stakeholder feedback has been a big component this year, especially through distance learning. One of the areas that I've specifically focused on for distance learning is the mental health and wellness component. And I do wanna again reinforce that this is something that we're doing across our organization, content-wise, grade level-wise, something that Tracy, as she was presenting her side, continuously mentioned social-emotional development, social-emotional learning. And that's our biggest focus, right? Because in the end, we don't teach books, we don't teach subjects, we teach children, right? And that's who we're connecting with. So with that, focus has been also our attendance policy. So attendance policy, making sure that we are in compliance with regulations as well as legislation, and making sure that we are abiding by guidelines for attendance. And so as Erden shared earlier, we have good ADA in terms of numbers, looks great. We're still focusing on that engagement piece. That's something that we really need to focus on. One of the areas that we have for discussion is the use of cameras and making sure that we can engage students, have their cameras on best as we can, bordering, you know, we wouldn't be able to make it mandatory, but definitely making sure we can promote that. But there's different strategies our organization is using across our schools that definitely are engaging our students. And so that's what we're going to be highlighting as we move forward. With the Dean of Students and the leadership team, my focus is to continue to support them throughout this process. As I stated there, collaborative meetings, partnering with different organizations to support student services, Chicago School of Psychology, that's something that was already happening at MSA 7, and thankfully Principal Wittick connected us to that person who was able to get us workshops for not only our students, but staff and families as well. LACO, this year we're able to partner with ECHO through Cal State LA to support oral health because they weren't able to do presentations in person. They did virtual presentations and they provided free oral health supplies to our families. So that's something on a greater scale when we're talking about student services. It's not just the academic piece, it's the whole child we're really trying to support and do well with. So that's my piece. If you have any questions, you're more than welcome to ask. And if not, I'll hand it back to Jenny.
Yes, thank you. Before anyone asks any questions, if anyone in the public would like to make any comments or questions themselves. If not, committee members, go ahead and please ask your questions. Thank you.
I was just wanted to say thank you, Dr. Lopez, because I'm excited for this mental health program and anything I can keep helping with, I'm all in. Thank you.
Thank you always.
All right, thank you, Dr. Lopez. I will move on with Katie Mann, our ELA and EL program coordinator. Katie, go ahead.
Good evening again, everyone. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, good. Just wanted to check. So like all of the team has mentioned, you know, these last 9 months have really been focused on supporting all of our school sites, all of our staff and students with transitioning to distance learning. I have two focus areas. I support our English learner programs as well as our ELA teachers. Our English learner programs got off to quite a different start this year because typically every spring from February to about April, May, we're doing summative LPACs, and those got shut down mid-year last year, or I'm sorry, mid-test cycle when we closed in March. And so we started the fall really pivoting. And we were able to, the CDE granted an extension from the spring of 2020 to allow students time to finish that summative LPAC. So looking at all of our students who were eligible to reclassify, we actually had 61 summative LPAC assessments administered some remotely via Zoom and some in person when we were able to have students on our campuses, along with all of our normal fall EL work, including 49 initial LPAC assessments. Again, some given remotely and some given in person. So that was a large project for all of our EL coordinators. They had to do a whole new set of training for that. And so I was really tuned in for the first couple of months, curating a lot of those resources, providing a lot of professional development and ensuring that our students were able to receive the services that they needed, as well as students who were eligible to reclassify, were able to exit out of our EL program, even if they weren't able to do so in the spring. We were able to work on that in the fall. For our ELA department and our English teachers, as many of you know, I've been in this role for just under 18 months, and 9 months of that time has been in the pandemic. So I really have been focused these last 9 months on providing a lot of support for our English teachers, making sure that they had pacing guides for ELA classes. That was something new that was added this year. So all of our English teachers now have a pacing guide to follow that uses our curriculum. It's aligned to the IABs and to SBAC as well, really focusing on the standards and subjects and topics that our students need the most support in, where we want to show the most growth, as well as an assessment timeline. So we now have a formal process for those English IABs. We started that last year and formalized it this year for our English teachers. And we've also added our history and social studies teachers. They are also supporting our English department this year, administering research IABs, because that is a topic that they cover in the social studies classes as well. So we're actually able to double the amount of assessments that we're giving our students. Like Tracy mentioned for math, I have also been hosting collaboratives for our English department teachers. We've held two so far and we'll have two more coming in the second semester, really making sure that our teachers understand what the assessments look like, what types of questions are being asked, and how they can best support their students. I've also created an ELA website this year that's new. It actually contains resources for English teachers as well as all of our teachers for English learners. And so that is kind of the one-stop shop for everyone to go and find whatever they might need from me. So with that, I will turn it to Jenny to see if there are any questions.
Thank you, Gady. If there's anyone in the public that would like to make any comments or have any questions, please do so now. If not, committee members, if you have any questions, please ask them or any comments. Thank you.
Yes, we did. We finished our updates, academic updates. I know we're behind on schedule, and Jenny has a proposal to switch gears.
Since two of our items are actually overlap with the board meeting, I suggested that we skip those two since we are pressed with time. And the two items are review of MPS LCAP process for goals, 20 actions and lots of metrics, and the data presentation 2020-21 MPS demographics. They do overlap with the board meeting. So if it's okay, if we can just skip to the next item, which is 2D instead.
Yeah, I agree with that as well.
Okay. I don't know if I have to make a motion or what, but I guess
we can table these items and let's see.
Or make a motion to skip 2B and 2C so it can be reviewed during the board meeting since they do overlap.
Okay, so
So
I'll make the motion to move the items. To remove the items and discuss them in the board meeting.
Thank you. Can anyone second it?
I second it.
Was that Dr. Dick Bosch?
Yes.
Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and take votes. Ms. Covarrubias?
Yes.
Thank you. Dr. Dick Bosch?
Yes.
And Rabbi Beliak?
He took a few minutes off. He might be away at this point.
Okay.
Yeah, he said he'll be back.
I think we do have majority.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
Okay.
I think we're good with two votes.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on to 2D, which is update on Infinite Campus SIS transition, presented by Mr. David Yilmaz. Mr. Yilmaz, are you on the line?
Yes.
Okay.
Good evening, board members. Good evening, everyone. My team has been working very hard on this transition to Infinite Campus SAS, which we are going to use next year. So I'll turn it over to my team members to give a 2-3 minute brief update out of respect for everybody's time. So Jennifer, you want to project or?
I don't have a presentation or anything.
Jenny, can you project it?
Yes. Let me give me one moment. I will do this as quickly as possible. So let me just find it for you first. Jennifer, why don't you start talking and then I'll look for it just so we could get things moving. Okay.
Okay. So we've been working with Infinite Campus for the past semester to kind of work on that transition process. Right now, where we are now is Infinite Campus has created a trial site and our team has been reviewing the data with the Infinite Campus team to kind of make sure that everything is pulling over cleanly. A second trial site will be created sometime next week. And we will have a site in January so that we can start training office staff on the online registration. We really want to push online registration for the 21-22 school year. And so we will train our office staff sometime in late January, early February, so that they're ready for that registration period. And then the rest of the MPS team members and teachers, admin, will begin training on the system as a whole starting June 21st. And our official go live date will be July 1st. Those are our updates for now. I don't know, Jenny, if you want to ask if anyone has any questions or.
Yes, thank you. If anyone in the public would does have any comments or questions, please do so now. If not, committee members, if you have any questions, please go ahead. None? Okay. Then we'll move on to the next item, the last item, which is 2E, renewal timeline, progress and process for MSA 1, 2, and 3. I believe this is presented by Mr. Ajar.
If you can stop sharing, I can share my screen. Good evening, board members. Again, this is Mr. Ajar, Chief Academic Officer. The item in front of you is an update on our renewal progress and process for MSA 1, 2, 3. As you know, we do have schools going into renewals cycles and upcoming our MSA 1, 2, 3 authorized by Los Angeles County Office of Education. We are looking into renewing them in the 2021-2022 school year, and that requires extensive preparation by almost everybody at the home office level, every department, and then school sites and their communities updating the petition and submitting in within the timelines. And such, and particularly this year, as you know, with the new legislation, AB 1505 is a big legislation impacting the approval and renewal of the charter petitions. We have given a particular importance understanding the requirements and complying with what is needed. We've been monitoring, attending the CD webinars and every information that we can gather, you know, what impact will put us in terms of preparing for the renewal meetings. So in front of you is the timeline that, you know, highlights, you know, certain key aspects of getting ready for that renewal, looking into a submission in around August 2021, and then with public hearing interviews coming and decision, you know, making, we're looking into November, December timeline of approvals with Los Angeles County Office of Education of those schools. I know Alfredo Rubalco, our superintendent and CEO, has been following all the renewal petitions in the authorizers, especially in the Los Angeles Unified School District, and he has updates with the process and the landscape out there. Alfredo.
Yes, sorry about that. Was had it on mute. So good evening, board members. and Magnolia family. So as Erdin stated, with the implementation of AB 1505, which all of you did get a chance to learn about AB 1505 last year before the pandemic in early December. And then also David presented with the academic team just kind of how we're doing specific to the dashboard when it comes to all of our schools. So now what we've been doing in the last couple of months is really understanding how each authorizer is going to interpret AB 1505, because although the state created the law, the implementation piece, the policy piece is going to be interpreted differently. So for instance, LAUSD, you know, they have interpreted the law in a way where, it does heavily rely on the dashboard data and compares the dashboard scores, the academic indicators with the state averages for school-wide and subgroups, right? But they also took it a little bit further to compare some of the data that's not as convincing with the resident school, which was part of the former Charter School Act, right? And then LAUSD also is looking at reclassification rates of students, which is not necessarily under AB 1505. They're looking at long-term English learners, and they're looking at at-risk students as well. So from them, we get a good sense of how they're evaluating schools. So when we look at our three renewing schools, all of them are classified as middle performing, MSA 1, 2, and 3. So our focus has been to really focus on those dashboard indicators. And we know that this year the test is, as we stand, going to be administered in the spring. We still don't know how that will look, how that will feel because of this ongoing pandemic, but we've been meeting with the schools. You know, we've had two meetings with them and really focusing on each one of the areas that they're looking at. Besides the dashboard scores, kind of the post-secondary outcomes, a lot of the college and career readiness indicators that the renewal will be focused on. So the schools have been doing a great job to really, you know, work with their teachers on those academic indicators and still balance, you know, having to go through this pandemic, distance learning, so on and so forth. So as more information comes to us, we will definitely share with the board. But right now, we do like our progress that we're making with 1, 2, and 3. And we'll have more data and we'll have more meetings. Those meetings will happen monthly. And then we'll be reporting out to the board where we stand. So the hope is, again, by December of 2021, all three of our schools would be renewed for 5 years since they're all middle performing schools. So we'll keep you updated on that process.
Thank you, Alfredo. Returning to Jenny for questions.
Yes, if anyone in the public has any questions or concerns, comments, please do so now. If there's nothing, committee members, if you have any questions or concerns, comments, please do so. Please ask. Thank you.
All right. Thank you all.
Ms. Covarrubias, are you still on the line?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Yay. Would you like to say anything before we adjourn the meeting?
No, I just want to say thank you to everybody that was involved in this meeting and for all your work. And I'm sorry that we weren't able to go completely through the items, how, you know, the work that you put in, but we do appreciate it. And we did read it. So thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you for the comment. Would you like to adjourn the meeting?
Yes, I would like to adjourn this academic meeting. It's 6:38.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you all. See you later.
Thank
bye.
You. Thank you, bye.
Bye, everyone.